Start off by thanking Wes for that reading. It was a little bit lengthy, but gave a good context for some of the things we're going to get into. In fact, if you want to keep your Bibles open there, it'll help serve as a good reference. We're in a study of a series of foundations of Christian living we've been looking at, and we've been through sections 1 and 2 already. One, kind of quick review, started off by... And we need to keep in mind, too, we looked at the two greatest commandments, that one should love God with all their heart, all your soul, all your might, and then love your neighbor as yourself. If you just wanted to encapsulate or boil down Christianity, you know, that's it. What else we're looking at is just a kind of a fine-tuning annoyance of those two great commandments, or ways of explaining them in certain circumstances. As we looked at section 2, it had to do with our own personal worship, devotion to God. As we live in the world, as we get away from church, doesn't mean we quit being Christians. That our relationship with God should be something we should nurture, that we have the week. I mean, one of the things we took the Lord's Supper for was to remind us, you know, up this week of what we owe God, of what we should be doing for Him, the debt we need to pay. So that's all encompassed in our daily devotion to Him, you know, Bible study, prayer, whatever. And now we're looking at section 3, having to do with the foundations of assembly. Now, as we come together as saints, some of the things that we've looked at, prayer and saying this thing you can do on your own too, but there's things we can do in group Bible study next week. These are things that you only do on your own, but there's differences, too, as we come together and do them. And so we need to look at that. For this morning, we're looking at stewardship. And that is, and again, from the context that was read to us by Wes, God has given us a perspective, an insight of, as stewards of God, you know, a lot is required of us. That we are entrusted with so much. In fact, what you could take from stewardship of some of the other titles Christians have, we're priests of God. You know, and we have all the responsibilities of being a priest, of knowing the law, of exclaiming the praises of God to men. We're citizens, fellow citizens with the saints. We have the responsibility of being citizens in the kingdom of God. And as a steward in God's household, there's much we are entrusted with that God has given us. We have to look at the things we have as God's, but He has turned them over to us for our use, and we have to use it wisely. You know, we have to understand our responsibility of the things of God. The whole world is the Lord's, but it's for our use, and we have to keep a proper perspective in this, and this is the way we're approaching it. And, of course, as we left off, it is required of stewards that one be trustworthy. If we can be trustworthy to God, we can also be trustworthy to ourselves and others. It's all intermixed off of those two major commandments. Okay? So this is the big thing that Paul is saying, the trustworthiness of being a steward. Okay? Now, reasons for just giving, that is how God wants us to use the things of His. Okay? And what's the reasons for it? And we're not just talking about money, as we'll see as we'll go through this in the second section. Reasons for giving, first of all, it's an investment in the future. In 1 Timothy 6:17, and we're going to cover this one again, so I cropped it up a little bit, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God. A little editing there. We'll bring up some of the other context a little bit later. But here's the emphasis here. Storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future. So what you're doing in your giving is you're also, you're kind of exchanging that for something else. You're exchanging it for riches in the next life. So that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. So in your giving, not only are you planning for the future, but it's a planning of the future that takes place now and in the world to come. So you have to think of it in that way as an investment. And that's just something you have to, you know, you have to stop and think about at some time in your life. For you that are working, especially if you're young, at some point, if you're thinking about quitting your job and retiring, most of us older folks, we thought, I'll retire when I'm 50, 55. And then as you approach 55, you see it's going to have to be 60. You work a little bit longer. And then, 65, I just got, something from the government that says, we'll pay you so much at 65 if you retire. But if you wait till you're 70, we'll give you this much more. So there's always a sliding of putting off the retirement. But one of the things that you look at if you're going to retire is, what are you going to retire on? Have you put anything away? I used to do investment counseling for New York Life. And you sit down with a client and you go, okay, you want to retire. You really want to shock somebody. You take out a dollar bill and you go, rip it in half. You say, okay, whatever you're living off now, that's what you're going to have to live off of. So you're going to have to plan for it. And you're going to have to plan differently than your parents did. I know when my dad planned for retirement, it was, okay, I'll work, I'll pay off the house, and then I'll retire. And most people live like 5 years or something like that. And then they died. And so that was a good way of planning it. Unfortunately, now, the houses don't last as long, so even if you pay it off, you might have to buy another one after you retire. When you're retiring, you're living almost as long as when you worked, another 25 years or something like that. So there's a lot more in the mix. Plus, when you actually start figuring it out, say if you wanted something close to what you're living off of now, how much would you have to put away in order to live off of a certain percentage? Now, even that's changed. It used to be like, if you could put your money into, and don't laugh, it used to be possible, you could put your money into something and get 10% on it. It's a good CD in the bank if you find one that makes 1.6 or something like that. But it used to be, okay, if you could put your money, your retirement nest egg into something that makes 10%, okay, what you have to do, though, is figure is living off 4%, because 6% has to go back into the mix to keep up with the cost of living, which was increasing like 6% at that time. But how much was that original putting away that you could live off the 4% roughly what you're living off of now? I figured it out and go, there's no way I'm going to put away $2 million. And that would give me a nice healthy $30,000 or $50,000 a year. Okay, so at some point you got to figure, I got to start getting serious about this, putting something away. This is what we got to do with God. We have to start getting serious about our investment in our future, of our spiritual future. Not only here, but especially in the life to come. Okay, and so the thinking about giving, this first of all is it's a planning, it's an investment for the future that has to be looked to, has to be. I mean, if you've got nothing stored up in heaven, you ain't going there. Also, and the reason for this and why it's a story of image, because what you're doing is glorifying God. This is one of your main purposes as a priest, as a citizen, whatever, is the glorification of God. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 12, Paul starts, "For the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints, but it is also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God." As we, what we're doing is we're taking care of each other's needs. But as we do this, some of it spills over in the world. And as the world sees what we're doing, remember in our study of Acts, even those that didn't become Christians, when they saw what was going on in the church, they thought it was a good thing. They really liked it. And the word spread. Yeah? So even if... even beyond the church and what we do for one another, it begins to glorify God in the world. Because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience, to your confession of the gospel of Christ, and for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all. So you're starting to get into being a giving person. And the world sees that as a good thing. And that is not something that's normally in the world. If you've ever taken a history class, ancient history or whatever, the world is a taking place. I mean, the world is famous for its conquerors. You know, the Romans, you know, the Babylonians, you know, the Mongols, the Saracens, you know, they went in and they took. They robbed, they pillaged, you know, they took spoil, you know, they cleaned out. Yeah, you know, it's a taking place. And this is what God is trying to do, is flip the world upside down. If everybody was a giving individual, the world would be totally different. It'd be more beneficial. It'd be more profitable. Like we were saying, you wouldn't need armies. You wouldn't need police forces. Okay? So yeah, this is a concept that has to get in. This is not just nice stuff to do. This is what's going to make a difference. Because the world where everybody takes, you can't police it. You haven't got enough money to police it. You can't support an army large enough in order to keep everybody in check who's out to take everybody else. Just won't work. You will not live in peace. I mean, if you look at our community, you know, you live in a nice little house. When was the last time you thought your neighbor would come over and break in your house and steal everything you got? You think, well, that's the influence of Christianity in the world. You know, that's our Western civilization. Christianity is the hub of it, of the way we think. We just have disasters in Japan. What's the first thing the Christian nations do? They go help. You know, communist countries generally don't. Islamic countries generally don't. That's the difference of Christian teaching and the influence it's had on the world. It is a proof of your love. In the second, not only to others, but to yourself. You know, it's making you a loving person. 2 Corinthians 8, beginning of verse 7, Paul says, "But just as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and all earnestness, and in the love we inspired in you." Okay? Paul was a giving person, and he inspired that in those. Christ was a giving person, and they inspired it in their disciples. "See that you abound in this gracious work also." "I am not speaking this as a command, but as proving through the earnestness of others the sincerity of your love also." It is an accounting of our stewardship. When we give, we're showing to God, we've got the right kind of spirit. We've got the right kind of mindset. We understand what he's given us to do. In Luke 16, he says, "Now he was also saying to the disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and this steward was reported to him as squandering his possessions. And he called to him and said, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship." Basically, "I want to see the books." Okay. Well, your giving is your record, an opening of the book of just exactly where your heart is. And God can read that. You're given an accounting. In fact, even in this context, you see, even the unrighteous steward, he was smart enough to plan for the future. I mean, that was the whole point. There's going to be a time of accounting of the books. What have you got to show God? What have you done? What kind of treasures have you put up in heaven? It is a way God returns an increase. Now, don't get lost in here when he talks about seed and sowers. I mean, he's just making a point that you have to put into a spiritual realm. But the physical, clearly makes the point. Okay, a farmer has seed, okay, and he has to put it in the ground in order to get a return. Now, what's nice about the things that grow is that if you plant an apple seed and you get an apple tree, you get more than one seed back. I mean, you get a whole tree full of apples, and each apple has a multitude of seeds. Now, if you never put that seed in the ground, say you just hoard it, and you put it away, and you go, "I got an apple seed." I mean, it gets ludicrous when you think, you know, which way is the world mostly go? No, God goes, you know, you take the seed and let me work with it. You put it out there where it belongs, and I'll return you a whole orchard. Okay. Now, if you've got the physical in your mind, it could be an apple seed, it could be a wheat, you know, whatever. The whole thing, the way God has designed things, it gives you a lot more than what you put into it. And he's saying the same thing about the Spirit. If you sow bountifully, you'll reap bountifully. I mean, what do you reap in the Spirit? Friendships, you know, enduring relationships, things that make the heart, you know, grow warm, the sense of security of community, all these things is what God intended. And the more you invest in this, the more you've got. In fact, one of the things that it's interesting about the Lord is, you know, we think we know it all, but as John warns us, you don't know the least little bit about all that Jesus did. I mean, when he goes to his disciples, even when he's coming into Jerusalem for the last time, he goes, go to this certain man, da-da-da-da, and just tell him you want the horse. And it's waiting for him, the colt. It's waiting for him. The disciples didn't see anything about him doing this. But he made arrangements for the future. Constantly, he's doing this. He's making these arrangements. And things are prepared. And when he needs them, they're already there. He will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. The more righteous things you do, the more God will give you opportunity to do what's good and right and holy and everything else. And that'll have an effect on you, making you a different kind of person. And it blesses your life. In Acts 20 and 35, interesting passage, because Paul says, as our beloved Lord said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. I challenge you to find in the Gospels where Christ ever said that. What we have is a unique little gem, four little words that Paul knows about that we don't. But he knew that Jesus said this. Now he's sharing it with us. Yeah, I mean, look how powerful these four little words are. Now, as you look at it, you know, is it more blessed to give than to receive? Is there no blessing in receiving? That's not what he's saying. You know, it's blessed to give and it's blessed to receive, but it's more blessed to give. Okay, Paul was a receiver. You know, he writes to the church at Philippi, oh, I received your gift and it came at a right time. I really needed it, and he was very thankful for it, and it was a blessing to him. Is receiving it. But he's also saying it's more blessed to give. You get more of a return from it. First of all, God is going to return that in magnitude because that's your investment. And there's a lot more that you get. It's not just you're parting with something. You know, someone once said, yeah, the more love you give away, the more you get. Okay, on all levels. This is what God's trying to get. You can't hoard this stuff. The more you give of yourself to others, the more you're going to get back in spades. This is what Paul saw of himself. And notice, God is a giving individual. He's just trying to make us like him. God gave his son. God gives us everything from the riches of his blessings. He's a giving creator. And he's just trying to tell us, you know, this, it's great being a giver. I'm trying to train you to be that so you appreciate life more. So what should we give? I'm going to say, first give yourself. Here's we have an example of the Corinthians. Paul writes to the Corinthians, 8th chapter, verses 3 through 5. For I testify, now he's talking about these individuals, Macedonia. And look what they've done. Okay, first of all, he says, I testify, there's four things, that according to their ability to give and beyond their ability, that's just one point. In their giving, they had the ability to give, but they went beyond that. They went far beyond that. Okay? They gave of their own accord. Nobody had to force them to. They gave it because they wanted to. In fact, they even began to beg us with much entreaty for the favor of participating. Now, that's attitude. Not only didn't have to be told, but they got down and begged to give more of themselves. And not as we expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord. Beyond the money, like I said, this is not about money. This is about the giving of self. You know, time, labor, whatever. But even more than that, think of the example of the widow's mite. Now, Jesus, you know, he's sitting there watching, you know, the treasury, watching all the people, you know, putting money in the treasury and the, you know, the wealthy people, and they're giving, you know, maybe huge sums. But then he goes, hey guys, come over here and watch this. Here's a widow. And she puts in two mites. He says she gave more than everybody else. Why? Because she gave everything. She no longer depended on the money she had. She gave it all, and now her life was the Lord's. She had to depend entirely on Him. She gave of herself. Give righteous behavior. Romans 1, 12 and 1. I urge you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies. You know, here is your tool. Here is your instrument in this life. What are you going to do with it? Fornicate, adulterate, you know, use it to lie, to steal, or whatever. Or you're going to totally reverse that and use this tool only for good. Only to worship God to the best of your ability. Give of your time, Ephesians 5, therefore be careful, you know, as a steward, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time. Okay, we can be wasters, prodigal, wasting our time. You know, what do you do with all the time, the valuable time that God has given you? You've got all those labor-saving devices, you know, to do all your work for you. You live in a community where everybody else, you know, somebody else builds your car, builds your house, you know, grows your food or whatever. You don't have to do that. Now, what are you going to do with your time? Thank God or invest in the world? Give of your abilities, Titus 3:14. And let our people also learn to engage in good deeds. You know, think about it. This is one of the things we're doing with these, you know, these assignments, you know, our listing and stuff like that. You know, what do you plan on doing this week for others? In fact, you know, watch this. Let me go back. Notice, Paul says, they first gave themselves to the Lord, I didn't bold this, and to us by the will of God. He wasn't looking at money for Paul. We're talking about something else. They were willing to help Paul the best of their ability, investing in others, helping out any way they could. And give a proper attitude. That's true worship, right? Not only the truth, but the spirit. God is looking for a right attitude. This is one of the things we should be looking for in our children. I don't care if the kid does what you tell him to or not. What kind of lip does he give you? What kind of attitude does he have? You're not trying to change just the behavior. You're trying to bring up your children with the right attitude. So watch for it. You have the job of molding that to in them and in yourself. You know, what kind of attitude are you showing them? What kind of attitude are we showing one another? Okay, in our giving, if the readiness is present, Paul says, it is acceptable according to what a man has, not according to what he doesn't have. This is God looking at your heart. You come here and you're supposed to give as you've prospered, but you haven't prospered. But man, you really wish you could give. You just did. God's looking at that attitude. I know if he had it, he'd give it. That's good enough for me. That's what he's going for. that attitude. It's there. It's there. Okay. 2 Corinthians 9:7. Let each one do just as he is purposed in his heart. Okay. So it's your purpose. It's not a tithe. It's what you want to give. This goes along with what the Macedonians were doing. In an attitude, you don't ask, well, what's the least I can give? You go, well, a tithe, man, that's an awful lot. A tithe? You know, 10%? Yeah. Okay, I'll give my 10%. And we pointed this out. If we got an attitude of, man, how many times do I have to go to assembly? Do I have to go Wednesday night too? Do I have to go Sunday night? Do I have to be there for class? God's looking for attitude. He's looking for someone who wants to be there every time the saints are assembled in order to be in the presence of God. Why would you not want to be there? Check the attitude, folks. You know, what are you giving to God? What are you giving to God? You know, finally dawned on me at one point in my life where I was just kind of streaming around. Sometimes you almost got to miss the church. And I did. At one point, 29 Palms, they didn't have a church. I started driving 120 miles round trip to go to church on Sunday, Wednesday night. One Wednesday night, my car broke down. And my attitude was such, I want to be there with the Assembly of the Saints, and I hitchhiked the 60 miles south to Palm Springs. Got there on time. But what's your attitude? You know, if you don't care what's happening in the world, you don't care if we got a blizzard, high winds, you know, nuclear disaster, somebody bombed the base, you know, have you got an attitude you're going to be here when the saints meet? That's what God's looking for. That's what God's looking for. Right? And not grudging or under compulsion, what does God love? He loves a cheerful giver. If you ain't cheerful about it, keep it. Keep it. Okay? Again, he doesn't need your money. Giving is for you, not him. He's trying to teach you to become a giving person. Like him. You know, to be made in his image. Give of your increase. Instruct those who are rich in this present world. You can be rich in the... He's writing to Christians. Nothing wrong with being rich. You know, money is not the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all evil. You'll find some very rich people in the Old and New Testament. But what kind of a steward are you? That's the question. Do you realize it's more that God has, you know, blessed me with in order to serve him greater? He's given me the increase. Okay? Not to be conceited or fix our hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. And, you know, he supplies us with things to enjoy. When was the last time you looked at this world and go, oh man, this is something God's given me to enjoy? Do you get kind of down listening to the news? I've been telling people I've quit listening to the news and the radio and whatever. I find it gives me a better quality of ignorance. All right. So, yeah. Look at the world. Look at the world. You know, imagine, you know, God gave it to us to enjoy. What in there is there I'm supposed to be enjoying in life? And this is what we should be doing. To be generous, ready to share, storing up for themselves that treasure. You know, so be generous. You know, that's what he's going for. Okay. How should we give? As we've prospered, you know, the first day, whatever. It's just if God gives you. Notice in Matthew 25. If he gives you only one seed, plant it. Okay? If he gives you an apple full of seeds, plant it. Okay? Or, as he says, if he's just giving you a cup of water to give to somebody else, give it. That's all he's asking from you. That's all required. I love that song. Okay, and this is a parting thought. God has raised every other standard from the Old Testament. You know, they didn't give a tenth of what they had in the Old Testament. Stop and figure it out. Look at, you know, the tithe was the start. But every time they messed up, they had to, you know, offer an animal or some grain or whatever. Now, how often do you think they messed up? I bet you there was people there with an animal. I mean, if nothing else, it's like teaching people out of the pocketbook. The more you sin, the more your herd's going to get depleted. So it's a good incentive to, you know, be a good person so you don't have to offer so many sacrifices. Okay. But look at the sacrifices and the festivals and the Passover and all this kind of stuff. Somebody estimated they get at least a third of their income, maybe as much as a half, you know, if they were really into it. Yeah. But should we not expect that he's raised his expectations of our giving now in the New Testament? Yeah. The Jews gave because it was the law. Christians give because it's love. Shouldn't that produce more than the law does? Which should affect the individual more. Other religions tithe or give enormous amounts to support their error. Should we give less to support the truth? You'd be surprised what some people give. I don't know if you know who Ed Parker is. He's known as the father of American karate. He's got studios all over the United States. He holds the international tournaments every year. He's dead now. But he was a good Mormon. Gave $1 million a year to the Mormon church. Error gets all sorts of support. You should think about supporting the truth, you know, which is really going to benefit somebody, you know, a little bit more. And don't disparage of the money or think that it's tainted or bad or whatever. I think Margaret Thatcher once said, how effective would the Good Samaritan have been if he didn't have the money to pay for the inn and the medical treatment and the food? It's not what you have, it's how you use it. And we've got some context questions for this and some study questions. Why is it more blessed to give than receive? We answered it a little bit, but think about it some more. Read the context of James 1, 19 through 27. Is this advice to an assembly or to an individual in taking care of others? Is it authorizing a congregational support of orphans' homes? Or is it really trying to say, what's our personal involvement in this? Of giving of self. You know, not just putting the money out to have somebody else take care of problems. How much are we willing to get involved to take care of problems? We'll get to that too also in further studies. Daily readings, Exodus 35, Israel's contribution to the tabernacle construction. What did the people give in order to start, you know, getting their religion started? You know, and what were they willing to put into the place where God was going to reside? Okay. Leviticus 27, laws for tithes and vows. Vows. I keep wanting to say vowels. Vows. Okay. Deuteronomy 14, more laws on tithing. Okay. Kind of got into it, you know, instruction. Mark 12, the example of the widow's mite, which we covered a little bit. 2 Corinthians 8, the example of the Macedonians giving. We covered that. 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. Also, you know, the ministry to the saints. God taking care of his own through his own. We're about to sing number 488. It's kind of a one-sided thought here, or one side of the coin. I think somebody said Wednesday. When it talks about Jesus paid it all, in essence, he did. There's nothing we could have paid out in order to redeem ourselves from what sin got us into, of how much of a hold Satan had on us. We were his. I mean, just think, we were not God's anymore. We belonged to the world. We belonged to Satan. He owned us. As the expression goes, lock, stock, and barrel. Yeah. Didn't have anything of our own in order to buy our own freedom. But Jesus came and paid the ultimate price for all of us. And it's just a shame that so many people can't be free and they don't avail themselves of the ransom. It's there. Christ paid it all for me, for you, for the whole world. Hopefully, as Christians, we thought about that, and now we realize we're bought with a price, we're not our own, we have a new master, and we should be serving him, and not the same old master we used to. But it's a good message to take to the world. This is what the Son of God did for us. This is our message. This is the gospel. How much God loved and gave of himself for the world that he created. It needs to get out there. And this is the way we can give of ourselves. It's interesting. When you look at the beginning of this country, founding fathers, of how much they put into it in order to get a nation started, many of them gave their property. They gave everything they owned. A lot of them gave their lives because they believed in this new start, one nation under God. It was different than any other country. And they realized they had to sacrifice everything in order to get it started for the next generations. And we have to think about that for the kingdom of God now. You know, if we want it to survive, to increase, and to be there for generations to come, we're going to have to make some sacrifices. If you need some insights on that, prayers and how to help you along in the strength of God to make the right decisions and stuff, let us know. The invitation is extended as we stand to sing.